Welcome to Fresh Local Honest, the podcast. Today on the podcast, we have Bob Bagdasarian and then Ashley Green from Kings River Winery here in Sanger. And I'm super excited because you guys are the first winery that we're having on. Usually we're more food related, but I mean, I love to pair good food and wine, if you know what I mean. And the winery experience, like bringing that to our listeners, obviously, like you guys have been in the Valley for generations. And so I'm super excited to hear your story and kind of bring it out. Can you guys just tell us, maybe we'll start with you, Bob. Tell us your journey here to the winery.
Okay, well, my parents are both immigrants. You know, they came over from Europe after World War II and arrived in the United States about 1949. And we, without a farming background, with a different type of background, and eventually they got into farming, bought some farms, several of them around the area. And ultimately, I went to college and graduated from college and went to work as a pharmacist. I was educated to be a pharmacist. But, you know, from the beginning, we've always been exposed to wine because European customs are different, slightly different than, you know, our customs here. And so as young teenagers, we were offered like an ounce of wine, you know, for dinner and stuff like that. And you know, I kind of liked it. And so I've always been interested in it. And then when I was in college, it was at University of Pacific in Stockton. It's not that far from Napa. There's not a lot to do in Stockton. So we occasionally make excursions to Napa. And that was in the early days when there were hardly any wineries, maybe 15 or 20 wineries in the whole place. And they really didn't care what your age was, as long as you had a couple of bucks in your pocket and enjoyed the wine. So we were able to enjoy the wine in that region. When years later, I started making wine at home, and it was more of a hobby. But as the hobby went, it got carried away, and pretty soon, you know, instead of making 5-gallon carboys of wine, I was making 60-gallon barrels of wine. And that led to Kings River Winery.
Wow.
We decided it was time to actually establish a small winery. And that was, we started in 2013 with some wines. We weren't quite ready even to open, although we had the licenses and stuff like that. But we were kind of pushed into it by some of our customers. And we ended up opening. And since then, we've been making wines.
Wow, I love that story because it's like the passion was driving your life kind of story, and it was all kind of coming back around.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun to make wine, and it's even more fun to drink it. So it has it's a hobby that has a good reward at the end, right? So it's not necessarily good, financial, but
I don't feel like if I made wine, it would be maybe as tasty, but.
Oh, I don't know. It might be.
Oh, well, great. Well, Ashley, tell us a little bit about what you do at Kings River.
Kind of like what we were saying before we started, I kind of do all kinds of different roles. It just depends on the day. Mainly I focus on managing like the winery side, so the tasting room and the venue. I meet with all of our clients when they want to come and tour the venue for a wedding or an event. So I do all the sales and marketing for that. And just make sure like the place is moving along. You know, sometimes I'm the janitor, sometimes, you know, you got to get down and mop the floors, but a little bit of everything. I've been here, tomorrow will be 5 years. So I've just seen it grow from doing weddings in the parking lot with a tent to now we have a beautiful indoor and outdoor event center. So it's been really fun to help it grow and just kind of see where we're going to keep taking it.
Love that. Love that. Well, maybe I'll just pivot into a question real quick for you then, like with all of the events, you know, obviously people were planning to get married and have beautiful events. So what's been going on there? I've kind of wondered, have people just rescheduled their weddings, or, you know, like maybe had a party later, or they're planning on doing it later, maybe 2021, and just rocking it with their friends later?
Yeah, every couple is different in what they're choosing to do. Right now we're able to do the wedding outside. So we've had a lot of people be flexible and switch to doing it outdoors, following all the social distancing guidelines, and making those accommodations. We try to take on most of the burden of the changes that need to go into their event, so it's still really stress-free for them. Mm-hmm. Other people have just postponed to 2021, and they'll do the same big ceremony, big reception next year. We tried to, for the most part, get everybody to a similar date that they had originally booked. So if they were booked in May and they wanted to go to next year, putting them to May 2021, just so they're still able to get like that spring wedding that they planned for, or the fall wedding that they planned for. But it's been a lot of adjustments, and again, just making sure people feel safe and comfortable, and trying to be as accommodating as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's, yeah, a lot of things. I mean, who would have thought 2020 was gonna give us all of these interesting U-turns? But here we are.
I was just looking back, and I had wrote, like, in January we were at a bridal show, and I was like, this year is going to be like the best year ever. We have like the most weddings that we've ever had on the books, and it's going to be an amazing year. And it's just kind of like snowballed into a, not a disaster, but just every day is something different. Now it's, yeah, air quality and fires. It's, you know, the pandemic, but it's made us, you know, better, and we're going to come out of it, you know, even better. It's going to be worth it in the end.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting to think back of who we were in January and February of this year, and then to think of all the things that we've gone through, and how we thought we had problems back in January and February. And
the biggest problem I used to worry about for the events was, is it going to rain? And now it's like, it can rain. It's fine. We can handle anything.
Right? I know. It's crazy. Well, maybe Bob, can you give us a little like tour of a peek of what we would get, like if we ever toured your winery?
Okay. Well, you know, obviously we need grapes to make the wine. And so we grow our own grapes. 100% of the wine we make here is from our own vineyard. And we do grow 12 varieties of grapes. So we have a very large selection of grapes that we can choose to make wine out of. And the serious cultural practices start in early to mid-winter, and that's the pruning. And so that's something that's coming up sometime in end of January, and we will prune our vines. And that's really an important part of the process, because that's where we make the selection of which wood to leave on the wine and how many buds and all that kind of stuff that limits our production, which we try to do. And after that, it's just a matter of keeping it mildew free and bug free, and, you know, the usual challenges that come up like hail, frost, and all those things. So we go through that process. And then when harvest comes along, we have our own lab here, and what we do is we test the grapes for acid and sugar and the total acid content besides the pH and, you know, other things like sulfur, a handful of things. And when all those things are balanced, then we start harvesting. And then the grapes get pulled into here with our tractor and bins, and we run it through. We have all of our own equipment here, and it's mobile, so we roll it out to the patio where normally we have little events and tastings, and we make the wine, and it gets pumped back in. We have two barrel rooms. We have one on the north side here, and it holds our wine as it's fermenting. We have different tanks for different varietals and bins, and we go through the whole process, make the wine, and then we put it in barrels, and it ages in the mostly French oak barrels, but also a few American oak barrels, depending on what flavor profile we're trying to achieve. Then it sits there for maybe a year or two, and it ages in the barrels. And that process is also not hands-free because you have to top it. Wood is porous, some evaporates, and we have to keep the barrels full so the wine doesn't oxidize. Then at some point when we need it, we start bottling. And we do that here also. We have our own little bottling equipment. Everybody gets together, Ashley, and everybody, all hands on deck type of a deal. And we bottle, and we'll do that several times a year. We don't need to bottle a lot. We just bottle, 50 to 100 cases at a time. And that lasts us until the next bottling. And then we sell the wine here. We have a small wine club, and we have different events for them. And they can come in and buy wine for a significant discount, 20%. And also we have events that they can attend. And twice a year we have a wine club pickup. And they can come and pick up 6 bottles of wine or more and participate in events. Sometimes we have food. Sometimes we have food and a little bit of entertainment. So okay. We vary it as much as we can to keep it interesting.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the, I am not a wine connoisseur by any sort of the imagination. I toured a winery in Napa last year. Everything was so awesome and great. And I loved learning about the production process of it. But yeah, tell us a little bit about the varieties of wine you can get at Kings River and some of the more popular reds or whites or yeah.
We make, as I mentioned earlier, we have 12 varieties. So we have Syrah, we have Alicante Boucher, we have Barbera, we have a variety that no one's ever heard of before called Teraldigo. We have Tempranillo, which is a Spanish varietal. We have Albarino, another white Spanish varietal. We have Sauvignon Blanc. We have Muscat of Alexandria, we have Zinfandel, we have Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Petite Syrah. Those are all the varietals. Yeah. And we sell more reds, and some are blends of reds where we combine Bordeaux style with a Cab Franc and a Cab Sauv. Mm-hmm. And we have several combinations of those that we sell as a mixed varietal. And others like Petite Syrah, the regular Syrah, Alicante Boucher, many of them we have as individual varietals, meaning that it's at least 90% of that grape in the bottle. Mm-hmm. And we do sell whites also. We have some slightly sweet varietals. We have one we call Majesty. It's a very, very good seller. And it's made generally out of our Muscat of Alexandria wine. And then we also make a rosé, we call it Rosado del Rey. And it's, we have two varietals of that. One is slightly sweet and the other one is dry. And the interesting thing about rosés is that you can make a rosé out of virtually any kind of grape. Mm-hmm. It could even be a white grape, because you can just add a little bit of a red wine to it, or the skins from a red wine, and it actually will turn pink. So,
I had no idea.
Yeah, even like Cab Sauvignon, Cab Franc, Syrah. Everybody thinks those are strictly red, but in fact the juice is white.
Oh.
So if you can make a rosé out of Cab Sauvignon, we make one out of Syrah, we've made one. You can make it out of any varietal virtually, except for you can't really use the Alicante as because that juice is actually red or reddish, and then Petite Syrah, it turns into red very, very quickly. But pretty much everything else you can make a rosé out of. So a rosé is a very common wine.
I had no idea.
You can make it out of anything.
Tell me about how you guys like came up with like the varietals of wine that you wanted to carry. Is that inspiration from you growing up in Europe, or is it just like your community? Hey, I want a cab. How do you guys kind of decide on the varietals that you guys offer?
There's really two factors that go into that decision. One is the popularity of the wine. So wines like Sauvignon Blanc or Cab Sauvignon or Cabernet Franc are very popular wines. So are Zinfandel and to some extent Barbera. And so you kind of have those as a base that you need to carry. The other varietals we have, like the Syrah and the Muscat of Alexandria, Tempranillo, all those are chosen because those do very well in the valley. Mm-hmm. So if you go to any area, and it doesn't matter if it's here or Portugal or France or Spain or Germany, there's always varietals that are indigenous to that area. Mm-hmm. And of course, and Napa is included in that, in the Central Coast, you know, everywhere. But mm-hmm. everybody uses the advantage of what they have. So the climate, the soil, all those things go into the decision as to which variety that you're going to plant. And it's become more complicated as of late because now they have different rootstocks and clones that you graft onto a rootstock. So very few of the grapes are self-rooted, meaning that what the roots are actually the variety that's on top. Mm-hmm. And so there's rootstocks that have different advantages. Some of them are resistant to disease. Others change the nature of the grape. And then there's also clones of all those varieties. And some of them have 10, 15, 20 different clones that you can graft on top of those. And wow. You kind of research a little bit and you come up with that. One of the that helped to make the decision was also that our goal is to become sustainable. So that we don't rely on a large number of chemicals to keep everything going. And so we've stopped using stuff like Roundup or Gramoxone and other harsh fungicides and herbicides to kill these pests and weeds. And basically what we do is we just mow the grass, and we're trying to avoid what's going on in a lot of other regions where they're finding Roundup in the grape juice and in the wine.
Oh yeah. And
eventually our goal is to go organic. And so we don't use what we would call a commercial fertilizer, like Can 17 or any of those types of fertilizers. We use an organic fertilizer. And it's almost like a tea made out of bird guano. And other like seaweed and things like that that go into it. And we buy that, already prepared. We don't actually make that.
Wow.
But that's the kind of stuff we put on there. So we're not getting the nasty chemicals.
Well, yeah. And that sustainable like key is, you guys are like locals here. So that obviously means something to you all. So tell us like what sets your wines apart from, we have so many amazing areas here in California, but when you go to Kings River, what sets your wines apart from all these other ones?
Well, the wines that we do, sell, obviously, we don't use the chemicals. So that's the first thing that sets us apart. The second thing is that we do age the wine. And unlike a lot of the local wineries, we do age in French oak.
Yeah.
So that gives us a nice vanilla, different flavors that you derive from the oak. The other thing is our equipment is modern, and it kind of very similar to what they might use in Napa or the Central Coast. And it allows us to process the wine in a very clean, organized manner. And that gives us another little bit of an edge on some of the other wineries around here. Also, the idea that we're local and that we're sustainable, and our grapes, we don't import our grapes from the coast or from Napa or Lodi or anywhere else. It's all grown. What you see here is what you get. You have to take a walk in the vineyard. In fact, recently we had an event where we did a combination wine tasting, grape tasting.
Wow. So
we had five different wines that we poured, and we had the grapes in little baskets for the people to try. So you can see the relationship between the wine and the grape that's used to make that wine.
I mean, that's amazing, Mike. You can walk in the same field that obviously a few years ago had these grapes that you're now drinking in a wine. I mean, what a cool and unique experience. And if you guys are, this obviously is like Central California, but if you're from Fresno area, or that's so close, you know, Kings River, it's so close. And I love that you guys are like local and using sustainable practices to kind of keep that going. I love that. Yeah, like the Central Valley does feed the world. And obviously we want to like enjoy wine as well in the world. And so, you know, these things and these practices, there's a time and a place, but, you know, farmers and legislators and, you know, environmentalists all need to work together to continue to create a place where everyone can kind of thrive in an environment where that can happen. And so we want to continue to get there, you know.
Definitely.
What do you guys think? I've asked a few people this during this time, but what do you think is misunderstood about farming or winemaking that maybe you guys want to set the record straight?
I think the biggest thing is that when a typical person goes to the grocery store, they don't make that connection between the farm and what they're purchasing, you know, in their basket. And so that not only extends to fruits and vegetables, but it also extends to meats and grains and all those other things. So the number of farm families has been reduced drastically because of efficiency and mechanization and the like. So people don't understand that connection, and they protest, okay, so the farmers use water, but you have to have water to grow the crop in order to feed the people. But they don't make that connection. And we have to do a better job of educating everybody as to where their food comes from and what some of the inputs are, like the water, the labor to harvest and the investment in machinery and land and all that to bring the food to everybody's table. And that includes wine. Wine is a very, very capital intensive operation. Because you have to have a lot of stainless steel equipment, which is very expensive, mostly imported from Italy or, you know, Europe somewhere. Barrels are expensive. They're anywhere from $800 to $4,000 for one barrel.
Wow.
And so that's a huge expense. The supplies that go into that, wine, the yeast and other added things are very expensive. Mm-hmm. The labs are expensive. And the taxes are very, very expensive. So all those things combined are pressures, you know, that have to be calculated into the final product in order to become financially sustainable. Ecologically sustainable. But on the other hand, you also have to become financially sustainable. If you're not, then you go out of business and it's over with.
Right. Well, and I mean, I just think it's so interesting too, like even when we visited the winery we visited in Napa, seeing the barrels and barrels and barrels of wine being, you know, aging, there's a lot of investment even before you can take, you know, a profit on something. And so you're like planning 2 or 3 years out. Is that right, Bob?
It is. You have to do that. Obviously, the wine we make this year won't be available until 2022, other than the rosé and the white wines will be available next year. But typically, it's a 2 to 3 year cycle from grape to actually bottled wine. And that each year that there's an expense involved in maintaining the quality of the wine, chilling the wine, you know, in the barrels. And we have huge costs, electrical costs that we've gone to, as part of our sustainable program, we've gone to solar panels.
So
we generally generate 100% of the electricity that we need in order to operate the winery. So we've been able to reduce our costs by half or even less, but we still have to pay for the solar panels and maintenance for the solar panels and other fees that the PG&E charges, regardless if you use their electricity or not. So those are things that all go into the mix, you know, what we do.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a fully comprehensive business. It's almost like you're a farming business, kind of you're a laboratory business, and then you're kind of a holding area, and then you guys throw events, amazing events and fun events. And so, I mean, I think our community at Fresh, Local, and Honest is going to love to hear about your sustainability practices and how you're working to make, you know, this a winery, like a better, it's a place to enjoy with events. And then you're caring about our valley and like being sustainable with the land and the solar and the water. I think that is something that people want to hear, like that local businesses are doing. And I just feel your passion in that, you know, like businesses are hard enough to run and then you're trying to be sustainable and all that stuff takes time, money, and effort. And I just commend you guys for spending that time and money and effort doing that and creating this lovely place where people get to connect. And so yeah, you guys follow everyone, Fresh, Local, Honest, the podcast. You guys have to follow Kings River Winery. We just so enjoyed hearing your story, Bob, and Ashley, just hearing how you guys run your business and how the community has just embraced you guys during this time. And I just want to give you a round of applause. I feel like everyone should get we hear about kids getting participation awards, like in sports now, just for doing nothing. I think everyone should get a medal for a business that makes it through 2020.
That's true. I think
everyone should get a trophy or a ribbon. Like you made it. And so I just, thanks for coming on. And you guys check them out on Instagram. Are you guys on Facebook too?
They have a website.
And I think you can even order wines online. I think I saw that. And so if you are staying home and not, they obviously, you can have them delivered to your home as well. And so to enjoy at night. So, but I just so appreciate you guys coming on today. This is Fresh, Local, Honest, the podcast.